listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
The Dynamo are dynamic as Montreal fail to make an impact in the playoffs this season as Houston sweep past the Canadian side 3-0 in the first round of the playoffs. CSKA Moscow will play one game behind partially closed doors. Is this enough for being found guilty of fans racially abusing players? And try telling Roma they're not perfect. Even without Francesco Totti, they get win number 10 out of 10 in the Serie A season against Chievo. Will they be able to continue it this week as we take a look at the matchups from all around the world, including Europe and the USA this weekend? Welcome to World Football Daily on Friday's edition of the show. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the important views from around the world of football. Joining me later on, as always, will be Rafa Gonzalez. I hope you all had a very happy Halloween indeed yesterday, and I hope you haven't stolen all of your children's candy and supplies from last night. I know that's exactly what I'd be tempted to do, is to raid the bag, stuff it all in the fridge, pretend that Super Spooky Ghost stole it, and then sit there munching for the rest of the weekend as I sit back and enjoy some cracking football. I mean, there are some weird big games coming up this weekend. Copenhagen take on Nordjylland, the two arguably biggest sides in Danish football take on each other. We've got Panathinaikos taking on Olympiakos in an iconic rivalry in Greece. We've got some fantastic Major League Soccer playoff football coming up, which I'm delighted to say that we will be chatting about the games coming up this weekend, and of course a look back at the last two nights, couple of games, with Jeff Carlisle from ESPN when he joins us a little later on. We've got Arsenal against Liverpool. Can Wenger or Brendan Rodgers show that their sides are true title challengers and go clear at the top of the table in the Premier League of the other? Or will it end up in a draw, in a stalemate? I mean, this is a great weekend of football. Everton against Tottenham, I'm really looking forward to as well. We've got Milan against Fiorentina coming up on Saturday. PSG play tonight to whet our appetite heading into the weekend. If you want football, and by the way, Barca take on Espanyol as well in the battle of Barcelona. Espanyol looking to get one over their rivals, who haven't started the season as well as some expected, but they still lead La Liga. Atletico Madrid getting a win last night as well in La Liga. There's stories coming out from all over the place. There's reaction to the games coming up, or a preview even of the games coming up, from managers all around the world, and plenty of managers in the Premier League have been discussing the disgusting fine that's been imposed by UEFA on CSKA Moscow. And I don't mean disgusting because it's wrong. I mean disgusting because it's not strong enough. The Russian club will have a partially closed ground when they take on Bayern Munich on the 27th of November. So basically, the Kimki Arena, where CSKA Moscow play, will be have one end shut. One end. Now, I'm sorry, is that enough? Is that really enough for a side who's been found guilty of their fans chanting racial abuse from the stands? It's not. It's just not enough. I'm sorry if I sound like I'm getting worked up about it, but we've been asking and begging and pleading for people to clamp down on this sort of behaviour at football grounds. I'll touch on this later on, I'm sure, but if anybody's seen the Spartak Moscow stuff from midweek, it's just abhorrent. absolutely abhorrent. And not only that, but Russian football is going to be hosting the greatest tournament in the world in 5 years' time, the World Cup. We're going to go from the home of Brazil, arguably the second home of football, really. The home of football is in England, obviously. But the second home of football, Brazil. And then we're going to take the World Cup to a place that is still so far behind the times that they allow just disgusting, ugly, rancid chanting and abuse to take place in their stands towards the players that these people are meant to be paying to watch, to enjoy watching the football. It's absolutely disgusting. There's plenty of people talking about it. Sam Allardyce of West Ham United saying it's not enough. It's just not enough. Alan Pardew saying, I think UEFA and FIFA need to have a policy that is strong, very strong. I think it's becoming an issue in stadiums in certain parts of Europe that needs to be addressed. And the only way to address it is with incisive action. We've done that in this country and we've done pretty well at it. Hopefully they can put something in place that eradicates that, because it's the last thing anyone wants to see in modern society. And I think that's the other thing, is that it is modern society that it's not just a football thing. It's we have evolved as a people to recognize in our minds that this sort of behavior is abhorrent. And it just drives me absolutely potty when you see this. What they've done is acted very quickly, says Chris Hutton. Clubs are now aware of what can happen, and I'm quite sure that if it does continue to happen, the sanctions will get stronger. Brendan Rodgers saying, I think it's a start, the more awareness of these types of issues. It was brave Yaya to come out and do what he did. It's another step towards eradicating it. The governing body, UEFA, announced in May that racist incidents involving spectators would be applied for the first offence, with a second incurring a full stadium closure and a fine of €50,000. That's £43,000. But that's just not enough. It's not going to change things. We need to start changing things and changing the way. Educating, yes, you can talk about people need educating, but also you need to make sure they understand the punishments. And I loved it. Last weekend, there was a discussion about it and somebody said, just fine them. Not just money. Fine them points as well. Dock points, because that's the last thing the fans want to see, is their team getting stripped of points, because points are valuable, because points are what gets them into big European competitions. And if they continue, ban them from Europe as well. It's got to be stronger than what's going on. Plenty of reaction coming out from that. We will try and talk about that a little later on today. Let's talk about something a little more positive. And I have to say that I am delighted to have our guest for today ready and waiting on the line to talk to us. Of course, we are in playoff time. Win or go home, as it's known sometimes in other sports around America, at least at the moment. It's win and win for the Dynamo and the Sounders. And to talk to us about those games from midweek and, of course, about the games coming up this weekend is one of our favourite guests to have on the show. Joining us from ESPN, it's Mr. Jeff Carlisle. Jeff, how are you, mate? It's a pleasure to have you on board today.
Hey, I'm doing great, Ollie. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed. So nice to finish up the week with such a lovely chap as yourself here on World Football Daily, my man, especially going into a playoff weekend. We do have to talk about the games from the last couple of nights, so the Sounders and the Dynamo using home field advantage to their advantage and getting past the Rapids and the Impact. Who's impressed you the most out of these two in those first playoff games?
Well, I think both Seattle and Houston, you know, delivered some pretty solid performances. But, you know, for me, it was Houston. I mean, that was about as complete a performance as I've seen them have in the last few weeks. And then, you know, certainly they've had some games during that time where they've played pretty well. But, you know, granted, you have to put it in context, too. I mean, they were going up against the Montreal side that really, you know, backed into the playoffs and has not looked all that impressive for the last two or three months. So, you know, credit Houston for taking full advantage. You know, I think the big key for them was Will Bruin. We're talking about a guy who has missed so many chances this season and really not been as sharp as he needed to be. But something about the playoffs gets that guy going, and certainly he was able to deliver last night.
The Impact, were they very much suffering, do you think, from an inexperience in the playoffs, as opposed to the Dynamo, who have, of course, been to the last two MLS Cup finals?
You know, I don't think experience played that much of a part. I mean, it certainly wasn't a situation where it was a team almost like New England, where, you know, they're chock full of young players who are just kind of getting their starts. I mean, you think about, you know, guys like Justin Mapp and Davey Arno and you know, Marco Cavallo's got tons of experience in cup competitions. So, you know, it was, you know, I don't think it was a case of inexperience. I think it was a case of a team really running out of gas, and also a team that had been figured out pretty much a couple months ago by the rest of the league. So, you know, and it was really, I would say, embarrassing to see them melt down the way they did with, you know, Rivas and DeVayo and Romero all getting sent off there. I mean, it was, you know, certainly it was a lot of frustration coming out. You know, obviously that club is not happy with the way they finished the season. But, you know, there's certainly much better ways to channel that anger than they showed last night.
I think running out of gas and melting down is exactly what the Impact did last night, Jeff. Unlike the Dynamo, who... do you think they've kind of, you know, had a fresh fuel injection, if you will, from this win? It's a Dynamo side that hasn't been quite what we expected, as you mentioned, with Will Bruin underperforming at times this season, but the playoffs bring the best out of them.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny to hear Bruce Arena talk, and he always says, well, you know, none of us have figured out the formula for getting this, you know, this playoff thing figured out, which is saying something given how many times he won MLS Cup. But, you know, Dominic Kinnear always seems to get his side ready. And certainly that's a testament to the leadership in the team as well. You know, guys like Brad Davis, you know, Bobby Boswell, you know, guys like that. You know, I think there is a little bit of concern going forward that they don't have Jermaine Taylor. You know, obviously he's out with a broken foot. You know, certainly Eric Bruner came in and showed pretty well last night. But, you know, now it's certainly going to be a step up in terms of the level of challenge with them going up against New York. So it's going to be interesting to see how that back line fares against a pretty potent New York attack who had, the most goals in MLS this season.
It is a potent New York attack, but it's also a New York Red Bull side that traditionally, Jeff, seemed to have stumbles in the playoffs and at the end of regular season time as well. The Dynamo, on the other hand, are still that experienced veterans, if you will, of the postseason play. Does that give them any sort of advantage over two legs against the Red Bulls?
A little bit, but you know, this feels like a different Red Bull team. You know, it's got a little bit more balance. You know, they've got a shutdown defender in Hamas and Olave. You know, certainly, I think they've got their midfield situation figured out with Dax McCarthy and Peggy Leandula, and I mean, he's you know, there's a good balance there, and then you got guys like Johnny Steele and Lloyd Sam. So you know, and then you go to the front line with Tim Cahill and Thierry Henry. So from front to back, wing to wing, I think this is a little bit different Red Bull team than we've seen in the past. So I think Houston has a little bit of an edge, just you know, having gone to the last two MLS Cups. But you know, this is, I don't think that gap is as much as it has been, you know, normally going up against a New York team in the playoffs.
Do you think Houston might have wanted, especially Mr. Kinnear, might have wanted to have a tougher test against the Impact to get his side kind of mentally prepared for the hard graft, as opposed to being able to almost sweep past them yesterday evening?
You know, I think if you're Dominic Kinnear, you're just happy to see your team play well. You know, this is a side that has shown some inconsistency. So, you know, the fact that they were able to you know, pretty much ease by a struggling team, you know, I think that speaks well of the Dynamo. You know, certainly we could be having a very different conversation, you know, say if Marco DeVayo pops up for an early goal in that match and, you know, then all of a sudden Houston's chasing the game and, you know, some of the questions that we've had about that side all season start to pop up again. So I think if you're Dominic Kinnear, you're happy to see your team play well. You're happy to see your team play confidently, especially a guy like Will Bruin, who, like we said, has struggled a bit in front of goal. And, yeah, so I think it all points, you know, positively in Houston's direction there in terms of just how they're playing.
The Sounders, of course, will be happy to have got past the Rapids, who didn't make a great showing for themselves either on Wednesday night. The Sounders against the Timbers, is this the one that we kind of all wanted to see a little later on in the playoffs, maybe?
Well, you know, you can't really, you know, script these things in terms of matchups. You know, last year we had San Jose and L.A., which is a great rivalry as well. You know, certainly, you know, the Sounders and the Timbers take it up a notch. But, you know, I think you're as a fan and, you know, an observer, you're happy to see these two rivals really go at it with a lot on the line. I mean, those games are always intense, but now with so much at stake, it's really going to be taken up a few levels, I think. So, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, you might want to see these two teams contesting the Western Conference Final, but you know, it's going to be a blast to watch. So I think, you know, as an observer, I'm happy to see that kind of matchup anytime in the playoffs.
With the Sounders maybe dipping in and out of form slightly at the end of the regular season, will Ziggy Schmidt have liked the fact that they've had the extra game to prepare for a side like Portland and with a win, as opposed to maybe coming off the back of a stumbling, slightly fumbling end of the regular season, going on to face a big rival like Portland in a huge game?
Yeah, I think it did line up pretty well for Seattle. They get a fairly tough team, but they get them at home. They've got the home crowd behind them. A guy like Clint Dempsey has had a little bit more time to heal up. I mean, I still think he's hurting a little bit, but I would agree that if you're Ziggy Schmidt, you're happy to see your team get that game and just again get some confidence. They go into the playoffs winless in seven. And had some real blowout defeats during that period, just some shocking defensive displays. So I think it was about as good a game as Schmidt could have hoped to get out of his side. They get the two goals. They keep a clean sheet, more importantly, which is something that they've struggled with lately. And so now they go into the Portland series with a bit more spring in their step, a bit more confidence. And I think it worked out perfectly for Ziggy Schmidt.
Is that Sounders backline going to be the key to getting past Portland? Because it's obviously a great Portland attack that finished flying at the end of the season.
It is, but I think they're going to have to get some mileage out of the midfield as well. Diego Valeri is a guy that really makes Portland tick. They want to get him on the ball as much as possible. I can remember that game. I think it was one of Dempsey's first games where Valeri played, but then he had to come off. And it's a situation where I think Ozzie Alonso and Adam Moffitt, who haven't always looked as in sync as you probably would want, I think it's going to be up to those two guys to really kind of shut down Valeri's influence. And if that happens, that's going to make things a lot easier for that back line and protect them a little bit. But I think it's been good for Seattle to get Jimmy Chiori back. He's obviously got a ton of experience. He seemed to mesh, and play pretty well these last couple games. Even the season ender against LA, the team just looked a little bit more solid, a little bit more on the same page. So I think, yes, the back line's going to have to play well, but I think the Seattle midfield's going to have to step it up as well.
Seattle going to maybe play a little more conservative? Some argue that it's a 4-4-2 with a diamond. Other people call this Seattle side really playing a 4-3-3 with Dempsey so close to EJ and Lamar Nagel up front.
Well, I mean, Dempsey's going to float around. I mean, he wants to have that free role. So, I think it's... they've got the two front runners, but, then they've got Dempsey kind of floating around. I mean, it's... formations always kind of tend to break down when you're trying to describe how a team attacks, because obviously there's a lot of interchanging, a lot of movement. Guys are just always trying to find space wherever they can in the field. So, they're going to have that midfield three in back of them, in back of Dempsey. So, I think it's not going to be a case where Seattle's going to slow down. I mean, they're going to try to keep the ball, which is always a tough thing against Portland. But they need to get an advantage. They need to get an advantage, coming out of their home field and heading into Geldwin. So, I look to see Seattle trying to be aggressive and really trying to take the game to Portland. So I don't see them slowing down at all.
There are obviously two more games coming up this weekend as well in the playoffs. The New England Revolution taking on Sporting Kansas City and SKC, who have been a side who have always been tipped to be there and thereabouts at the end of the season, taking on a New England Revolution side that I'm not sure too many people had down as being a playoff caliber side at the start of this season.
I mean, full credit to Jay Heaps for getting that team to, not only just to the playoffs, but finding an identity, finding an attacking style, with guys like Kellen Rowe and Lee Wynn and Juan Agudelo after he arrived. That's going to be a fascinating series, just because, New England's, the young upstarts, they're almost going in there with nothing to lose, given that's the first time they've reached the playoffs in several years. But I think Kansas City is just defending so well right now, and really I think the playoffs are about, grinding out those 1-0 wins. And that's been Kansas City's specialty right now. The big question for Kansas City is, where are the goals going to come from? I mean, ever since Kai Kamara left, they've really kind of missed that athletic, potent forward who is, can really be a game changer. And you know, now they're relying on guys like Suni Saad, Dom Dwyer. You know, CJ Sapong has not looked to be in his best form. You know, we'll see if they end up pushing Zusi a little bit closer to goal. But for Kansas City, that's the big question, is where are the goals going to come from? But with their defense, they're always going to be in a game.
For Jay Heaps, you mentioned what a fantastic job he's done this season, and such a young manager as well. I mean, we talk about the growth of New England, but have you seen him growing as a manager as well and really maturing as a manager in the last few years?
Well, I thought he was always a guy that, you know, tried to adapt to circumstances. He's a guy who's not afraid to make tough decisions and find alternatives. You know, earlier in the season, it was Khalif Cisse kind of playing that holding role, but, it became pretty clear that, he wasn't mobile enough. And so then they moved to Scott Caldwell, who certainly doesn't have the experience, but a little bit more mobility, pretty savvy with his passing. And then late in the year, when Caldwell started to struggle a little bit, he moves to a veteran like Andy Dorman. So, I think Heaps is a guy who's shown his willingness to adapt, to not just be stubborn and stick to one set of players or one particular system. But I think he even saw that a little bit in his first year as coach. I mean, they were just a lot more attractive team to watch. And certainly the way he's been able to build around these young players like Rowe, like Wynn, like Scott Caldwell, Agudelo, et cetera. It's been impressive to see their maturation, and we'll see how far they can get in the playoffs now.
And you say people are licking their lips at that game. RSL against the LA Galaxy as well, though. Jason Christ against Bruce Arena, two iconic managers in Major League Soccer. I mean, for West Coast football, this is a pretty big game for everybody, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's you talked earlier about maybe Seattle and Portland being a matchup fit for a conference final. I mean, you could say the same about LA and Real Salt Lake. Two very good teams. It's been very impressive to see Real Salt Lake kind of retool and get some fresh faces in there. And obviously they had to make some tough decisions, the last offseason about, getting rid of guys like Hamison Olave, Fabian Espíndola, Will Johnson. I mean, you think about what he's been able to do for Portland and how much Real Salt Lake might have been able to benefit had they been able to hang on to him. So, full credit to Garth Lagerwey and Jason Christ with what they've been able to do. And, the key, I think, for their team, though, is Chris Schuler. I mean, he's a defender who has been injured for most of the year. He was the guy that Jason Christ said he was really hoping could replace Olave and be that physical presence and let Borchers kind of be the organizer, kind of the on-field tactician, if you will. But he's had so many problems with injuries. And, it's a credit, again, to Real Salt Lake to be able to survive that. But now that he's back in the lineup, I think you've seen a Real Salt Lake team that defends a lot better than they did even, say, 2 months ago. So, that's an important boost for them. And I think it gives Real Salt Lake a little bit, more of a chance against a very good L.A. side. But it's very evenly matched, in my opinion. I mean, you've got Donovan and Keane on the one side and a very good midfield tandem in Marcelo Sarvis and Janino. So, great matchups all over the field in that one.
Jeff, I don't want to be accused of being a jumping-the-gun European journalist type thing here, but for Seattle and for RSL, I mean, Seattle obviously haven't ever achieved that MLS Cup dream. RSL, MLS Cup winners back in 2009, but have always been just that little too far off getting back to the final once again. Do you think that Kreis and Ziggy Schmidt are both maybe, if it doesn't happen this year, there might be discussion about maybe trying to change things up in the managerial positions at those two franchises?
Well, that's always been, in Seattle, that's always been kind of the rumblings. I mean, I can remember a few years ago, after I think a couple seasons of postseason disappointment, they're saying, hey, well, if Ziggy doesn't get it done this year, then he's out. And to me, that was just shocking to hear that kind of talk. I mean, given everything that he's done in the game, you're talking about a guy that's won, at least a couple of MLS Cups by my count, Supporters Shield, with LA and with Columbus. And we'll see what happens in Seattle, but so far he's gotten some pretty strong support, from upper management and granted, that's what they're always going to say. They're never going to throw their coach under the bus while he's still there, but just the tone of it and the vibe that's emitting from the Seattle owners, I get the feeling that they will stick with Schmidt. I think in Kreis's situation, it's all a question of whether he wants to move on to a bigger, what he perceives to be a bigger challenge. I mean, obviously there are tons of reports about him moving to NYCFC. The word I'm hearing out of Salt Lake is that they're going to wait for the season to be over, and then they're going to make a final push to lock up Jason Kreiss. I think that's critical for Real Salt Lake to keep him and Garth Lagerwey. Lagerwey's contract has another year to run, but I think that partnership has worked incredibly well for Real Salt Lake. And on a team that doesn't spend a ton of money, I mean, I think that's the real difference maker for them. If that tandem were to be broken up and to move on, I just think that edge that Real Salt Lake has, and always being among the contenders, always being in the playoffs, I think that's gonna be a lot smaller. It's gonna be a lot tougher for them. So the onus is on Real Salt Lake to really make Jason Kreiss feel welcome and convince him that everything that he wants to achieve in his coaching career can happen in Salt Lake City.
Possibly difficult times ahead for RSL in the long-term future. In the short-term, it's just as difficult taking on the LA Galaxy this weekend. Jeff, it's an absolute pleasure to chat all things Major League Soccer with you today, mate. Always enjoy getting you on the show and you giving us the breakdown to the big stories out of the US soccer scene. And there's not much bigger at the moment than playoff football right about now, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure, Ali. Anytime.
Cheers, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Mr. Jeff Carlisle from ESPN, rocking the airwaves here on World Football Daily, talking all things Major League Soccer and giving us a rundown to the big playoff games coming up this weekend. Of course, Revo's SKC and the Dynamo Red Bulls in the East, and then Sounders Timbers and the Galaxy RSL in the West. Where do you lie? I can tell you now that we have plenty of tweets coming in with people giving their thoughts. Juve J saying that he's going with somebody to the New York game, and the person he's taking has never seen the New York Red Bulls lose, and always sees them win, in fact. So he reckons there is no chance of a stumble from the Red Bulls this weekend as they take on the Dynamo. Do you agree with that? Let us know. Show at World Football Daily, at W Football Daily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the landline, and the Facebook page as well. Big thanks to Big Jeff Carlisle there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking a little bit of Major League Soccer, the playoffs. The playoffs properly get underway this weekend. Of course, it's almost like a pre-show, if you will. The Dynamo against Montreal last night, and the Sounders getting past Colorado. And joining me on the line now, as always, Rafa, man. I mean, obviously, especially the Montreal game last night, I felt that had a real bite towards the end. But I don't think it was a bite because of a competitive edge. I think, to me, last night felt, and I know we've heard Jeff's thoughts on it, but to me, it felt like the Impact almost weren't mentally prepared for that, whereas the Dynamo's kind of experience in the playoffs and whatnot really kicked in, and they looked in pretty much cruise control from the word go and looked confident, whereas the Impact came out and seemed on edge. They seemed like they had that extra rush of adrenaline. It was weird how they just didn't seem settled for any part of that game to me.
Sure. I completely agree with you, and I think that this kind of speaks to the mental stability of the coaching staff, really, as well, of the Houston Dynamo. Same goes for, Bruce Arena's coaching staff. These guys know what they're playing for. You play for the postseason, just like in basketball, just like in football. You play to get to the postseason, and once you're there, that's where the real money is made. That's where the real excitement really kind of happens, and that's where, you know, legends and stories that are passed down from generation to generations of fans really happen, man, and at least here in the States. And I'm not sure that Montreal, you know, being still a pretty fresh team in the MLS, I don't think they have that yet. You know, it takes a lot of time. Look at Seattle. For as long as they've been in the Premiership, Major League Soccer, they've I'm really sorry about that. That was terrible. They've been kind of, they've just been soft juice. Maybe they just need to kind of get into that that regular feel of experiencing playoffs and big games and finding success and finding a rhythm of finding that success in the playoffs to really kind of get themselves over that hump. I want to kind of go back a little bit to the Colorado game because I was expecting a little bit more out of them. I know they tried very hard. They had a really young team, Juice. They actually have two players on their squad who are up for Rookie of the Year. So I was pretty impressed by them, and generally I thought they had a little bit better of a chance to kind of upset Seattle a little bit, and I wouldn't have been upset with that. But so far, the MLS playoffs, exciting. I'm still excited for it, and still waiting to see what happens, man.
It is going to be interesting the rest of the playoffs, how they kick off. Obviously this weekend, the Revolution taking on SKC, the Sounders taking on the Portland Timbers, the Dynamo meet the Red Bulls, and the Galaxy taking on RSL. Obviously, I think plenty of us, or you and I, could agree on at least, Raf, that the Sounders Timbers is the one that we're kind of looking forward to, because it's quite a heartstring puller for me, because I've wanted the Sounders to do well all year. I like the Timbers. They changed their kit, but I can't hold that against them for too long yet. These two, I want to see these guys. These are the two sides that I wanted to see in that championship game, which is unfortunate.
Do you wish that that kind of rivalry playoff match happened later on in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's what I wanted, is the championship game, the Western Conference championship game.
Sure.
The Sounders Timbers. That's the one that I wanted to see, because of the atmosphere as well, which is what I wanted to get onto, is that, the other night with the Sounders against the Rapids, an immense amount of noise. Sounders always make a hell of a lot of noise, as do all the teams up in the Pacific Northwest, and a fantastic atmosphere that they've got up there. I felt last night, it's disappointing to see a playoff game, and I know it's a midweek and everything like that, but to see the stands, half empty for a lot of that stadium, and the atmosphere was good in that, I think, but it wasn't because of the noise that was made. The Dynamo, they're so good at BBVA Compass Stadium. We know that from that 36 unbeaten run that they managed to put together at that stadium. And so I think when the Dynamo are at home, there is a confidence about them because of that, which creates an atmosphere of an away team going in, because they know the Dynamo love playing at home. But when there's a lack of atmosphere like that, I really thought that would actually help the Impact last night, despite the inexperience. I really thought that the Impact would be able to kind of say, hey, well, okay, fair enough. We're on the road. We're against Houston. But we don't need to fear them, because they're not going to be they've got nowhere near to selling out that game. They're not going to be making a huge amount of noise behind them or anything. So I was disappointed. I was really disappointed in that that there was that little noise for a Dynamo side that, when you think about it, when you think about the playoff format, obviously the last two the last round has been obviously the one game, win or go home kind of thing. Obviously we're playing the next the remainder of the playoffs until the final over two legs, but I really think the Dynamo, just with that experience of being there, going to the MLS Cup final the last two seasons running, you can say that their season hasn't been that great, and you can talk about maybe kind of slightly underperforming, especially in that middle part of the year, but can't you also think that experience of the last two seasons, they know how to win playoff football? It's like when Di Matteo won the Champions League with Chelsea. He knew how to play Champions League football. He had a style that adapted and worked well in that sort of situation, and didn't work so well in the Premier League. And I do you not think that that's the same with the Dynamo, that they have this style of football, and their play in playoff football really pays off in that sort of format? Like, two games, you can hold on, and if you start making the most of the chances that you can create, as they did last night, although Montreal did give them a helping hand in how poor they were, do you not think that the Dynamo, you have to look at them and see them as a serious contender? The Red Bulls are renowned for flopping coming up this weekend. For flopping either late on in the season or in the playoffs. The Dynamo know how to do this, especially in this current side.
I mean, completely. Still agree with you. And again, it's primarily because they've been there before. This is familiar territory for the Dynamo. I mean, how many finals have they been in? Recently, obviously they've come up against stiff competition in the Galaxy as of late. But I mean, Houston have won their fair share of MLS Cup titles. Kinnear is a master when it comes to MLS playoff kind of life, and his record generally in the MLS is incredibly successful. So I think that carries a ton of weight right now, Juice. whenever you get to the MLS playoffs, again, you have to have that familiarity. You have to have that kind of mental stability to kind of rise to the occasion, still keep doing what you're good at, right? You know, keep doing what you're paid to be doing, and not let kind of the extra atmosphere, the extra kind of attention and media coverage and hype get to your brain. And unfortunately, you know, I think because also the fact that MLS isn't your, you know, your even your Major League Baseball, right? You know, it doesn't have that span of fans across the country. It's not even the NHL playoffs. It's definitely not the NFL or NBA playoffs. I really want to go there, but you know, the fact that, you know, these players in this league, in this sport, in this country, don't get the same kind of coverage that you would being an NFL player, you know, on a 52-man roster. You know what I mean? They just don't get that same coverage. So it's not like, you know, they're used to when NBC comes and it's like, hey, it's the MLS playoffs and you're getting prime time, you know, television. They just don't rise to that occasion, I think, sometimes. I think that sometimes they let that get to their heads, some of these new teams.
I think if Andres Romero wants to make a name for himself on primetime television, he might want to decide to do it in a slightly different way than he did at the end of that game last night. The ridiculous punt into the rear of the Dynamo player down at the corner flag. I think it was Nick Kofi Sarkodie. I think it was anyway, if my memory, if I can recall that correctly. But yeah, a completely disastrous incident, an incident that completely summed up how I thought the Montreal Impact's attitude went into, completely lost their minds in that game. You know, Nelson Rivas was throwing his weight around very early on in that game and deservedly got the two yellow cards and got his marching orders. And then the scenes at the end were just not the way to finish what you would have loved to have been an immensely exciting playoff game. And actually, it turned into pretty much a one-sided rout yesterday evening. But the Dynamo are through. And once again, a big thanks to Big Jeff Carlisle for joining us to talk about his thoughts on the playoffs as we get ready for a weekend of Major League Soccer action. Last night as well, Michael Bradley and Roma against Bradley's old side, Chievo, breaking the all-time record, 10 league wins to start the season, 10 in a row. That is unbelievable. No club in Italy has ever done that. Roma breaking the barrier here. I mean, we were talking about yesterday with Chris Folks. We didn't see it coming. And even last night, it wasn't a great Roma performance. Chievo were poor. They created very little going forward, I thought. But Borriello's strike, giving them enough, that 1-0 win. Is there any, I don't know, I mean, even when the wheels almost looked like they might have been coming off, you know, last night, it wasn't fantastic. They're still able to get through and get the job done against lower opposition. And we're talking about that fixture list coming up for Roma and how it does kind of play into their hands slightly. I mean, it genuinely could, Raf, go on for a long time yet this run.
Excuse me. You know, I don't want to sound so kind of stereotypical, Juice, but I mean, like, seriously, when you look at that game, that's kind of one of those games that the English would say, all right, but can you go up to, you know, Sheffield Wednesday on a cold
winter night? Yeah.
That sort of thing. I mean, seriously, like, it's Roma. Can you go to Calgary or whatever, wherever on a Thursday night? And they did. Kievo. They did. They obviously went there. They weren't very good. They were lacking some of their playmakers. Obviously, Totti's not in. But they managed to pull it out. They didn't play well. Obviously, Kievo played worse. But to rise up and kind of get through that and fight through a tough game and get 3 points shows a lot. And I think that, you know, this Roma team is, you know, they were expected to win that game, and they won that game. Much like, you know, Manchester United are almost always, well, they were under Ferguson, always, I'm being serious.
Yeah.
They were expected to win every game they went into. And regardless of whether it was a scrappy 1-0 that they got in Fergie time, you know, a Fergie time winner, or, you know, they demolish teams, they were always going to be expected to win. And no matter how, you know, they win, it's just expected. That's all that mattered. Sure, you could argue about, like, whether it was a nice win, a tough win, a consolation goal, whatever afterwards. But ultimately, it's the point that they were after. And you know, I think Roma did that. And that's what's really impressive to me about this team. Look at Inter, who...
It is. It's one of those... Sorry, Raf, as you say, it's one of those results that people would say that's the mark of a champion, grinding out those wins.
Exactly.
And getting it done against, making sure, unlike people like Manchester City, for instance, who have slipped up against those lesser sides, making sure that you just go out there and you do what needs to be done to get 3 points. And with a game coming up on the road against Torino, I mean, you know, last night, the Stadio Olimpico is behind them. You saw the scenes, the celebratory scenes at the end, you know, it was almost as big as the Red Sox. Fans when they won the baseball. I do want to come on to that, actually, the World Series final game in all just right. a second. One, there's a point to it, but it's not around the Red Sox or baseball, so don't worry about it. And I won't mention the fact that the Dodgers weren't able to get there in the end. but at home you would hope that's going to be the case. Now with the cracks starting to show slightly, but still getting the job done. Torino they go to, but. Then mentally, you look at the matchup for these two. Torino haven't won. Roma have won their last 5 meetings against Torino. And apparently, according to some of the stats that I've got here, have scored an average of 2.4 goals per game in those last 5 meetings. So this isn't a side that Roma struggle to score against. And the last time Torino got a home win against Roma was way back in October 1990. 5 wins and 7 draws against Roma at home. For Roma, away on the road against Torino in the last, what are we talking here, 13 years. I mean, it's a fantastic record they've got against Torino away in Serie A. And you just I don't see it stopping. I mean, it's a great weekend of football, but I really am interested to see if Roma do continue their charge on Sunday night.
Surprisingly enough, I think that this is also a tough match, considering that they have kind of a short week to kind of recover and sort out. I'm expecting a win, and I won't. And I'll be very surprised if they come away with anything else.
We will be looking out for that as that continues. Before we get into IKTS and we wrap up the games coming up this weekend across Europe, and of course we'll remind you of those Major League Soccer playoff ties once again. Raf, I said I want to mention the World Series, and there's not many times that I sit back and really enjoy baseball. I have to say, last night I did have the pleasure of sitting back and rewatching Game 6 as the Boston Red Sox basically cruised their way past the St. Louis Cardinals. I always want to say Arizona Cardinals because of my NFL background. But I do enjoy catching some of the playoffs and the World Series.
For reals, when it's really the only time you should be watching baseball, I guess, is the MLB playoffs. But unless you're like a real kind of into your team. I watched a lot of baseball this year, but mainly because I had the time and or their games were going on while I was listening to them on the radio. So that's why I was really kind of into baseball this year. Or I got to get into baseball again this year.
That and you were glory hunting because, you know, the Dodgers were doing well. So, you could suddenly pull on that Dodgers jersey
I was behind the Dodgers the season before. I mean, I've grown up a Dodgers fan. I just never really kind of openly talked too much about it because they were shit for the past couple of years. I could admit that. And even this year, I still stuck behind them when they had that incredibly, you know, insane start to the year and were, you know, talking about firing Don Mattingly. But I digress. What did you want to talk about the playoffs? By the way, here's why they lost to the Cardinals. They really a fluke kind of the Cardinals figured out how to hit Clayton Kershaw is really what happens. And when Clayton Kershaw goes up as your first pitcher, you expect him to knock down the win. He didn't. They hit him well both times that they faced him, and that's why we lost. So, continue.
So I'm going to stay away from anything that happens around the diamond and see how I use some baseball lingo there, Raf. And talk about what happened at the end of the absolute cracking series and playoff series, if you will. Because I do get into it a little bit. The final kind of, you know, pitch goes in. everybody starts celebrating. And Fenway's going...
By the way, our man Justin Pearson was at that game.
Oh, son of a gun.
Yeah.
I'm really jealous of people that get to do stuff like that. Although I have just got myself a ticket for England for the first time in years for their friendly game coming up in November. But I digress. That final pitch comes in. And Fenway starts going crazy. You know, like everybody's celebrating. It's a wonderful moment. And I was sat there enjoying hearing a stadium of people celebrating and cheering. You could hear the players dancing around, celebrating, cheering, and it was great to just hear that. And that was all you could hear, Raph. That was all you could hear because they weren't blaring out some bull. We are the champions. Sure. Any music like that. It was 100% about the noise being created by the fans, the atmosphere being created by the fans, and the fans being in that moment and making that noise with the players as well. And baseball may have a lot of things wrong when it comes to, you know, players cheating, the steroid abuse, the different rules in the National League and the American League and whatnot with pinch hitters and pinch runners. But seriously... having that, baseball has that spot on. And I can't remember if I recall the Super Bowl having music when teams win, and big kind of PA announcements and all that sort of thing, Tannoy announcements. I know it happens at football all the time, you know, when they lift the trophy and there's We Are the Champions playing and all this kind of stuff. And they can't wait to get the music on at most of these stadiums because it's a form of crowd control. But Wednesday night was absolutely cracking in that sense that there wasn't somebody blaring out music and kind of drowning out what was a fantastic moment for the franchise and for the fans as well. Before we got into IKTS, Raph, I just had to express how happy I was to see that, because the number of times that you're at football games and the music's playing right up until kickoff, and I mean literally as the referee puts his whistle to his lips, then the music stops. And sometimes it even carry over into the first seconds of the first half. And it's all a form of like crowd control, stopping the fans, making the noise. I mean, come on.
Look, I don't know. I didn't watch that final too much. Mainly because I despise
Boston.
But you
watch all the football finals and stuff like that, don't you? You watch World Cup finals, Champions League finals, all that. I mean, just... Why do they have to play it, mate? I know it's a form of crowd control and stuff, and you see what happened in Russia the other day. And
my point is that I wouldn't doubt that Fenway Park was probably trying to play music, but the fans were just that excited, and the tannoy or the PA system wasn't really working at optimal capacity, perhaps.
Look, if that's the case, that is some seriously loud fans. And considering they'd known that that game was over for, what, like two, three innings by then, that is...
Waited 192 games to get to that point, plus. Like 200 games to get there. I think that they had some pent-up aggression that they needed to let loose.
Maybe. I couldn't hear any noise from my TV screen, and it just made me happy.
I'm obviously a bitter Dodgers supporter here, so you're not gonna get too much praise or anything else from me on this.
But I'm not praising Boston or anything like that. I am praising.
I get it, but ultimately you're giving some praise to the. They don't call it. Yeah, I guess they call it a club. You know, the club that is the Boston Red Sox, the franchise, and their park, their stadium, their fans, the situation. And again, I just can't. I can't give them any praise. That's all.
If anybody's seen it before, we do IKTS and whatnot as well. Touched on it when we were talking about the punishment for CSKA Moscow after the Yaya Toure incident in the Champions League. And if anybody's seen the scenes from Spartak Moscow. In their game against, try and pronounce this right, Shinik Yaroslavl on from Wednesday night. If you see the crowd trouble that was taking place there, if something really has to be done about Russian football fans and football fans in general, I love the flares and fireworks and But when you see it, I mean, if you had a chance to look at it, it's just beyond ridiculous. And then you've there's a Nazi flag that has been unfolded as well, like a swastika, and you've got something's got to be done. It really does. You know, I said at the beginning of the show, UEFA closing off one section of CSKA Moscow's ground for the next Champions League game. Like, oh, big whoop. Like,
it's one thing to go to the football with your mates. I'm going to say your mates because that's, you know, just bear with me. Go to football with your friends and kind of let loose, be an ass, be kind of a little bit loud, a little bit rowdy. But when you're like showing essentially your true colors like that, right? Like that's not a... You know what you're doing when you're unfurling a swastika in a stadium like that. Yes. And I think that kind of, that speaks a lot to the population that's there and the mentality of the people.
And the number of people that I know, obviously there's one person, two people, whatever, with a swastika. And I'm not trying to say that not everybody's involved, but I'm trying to say it could just be, you know, two complete morons. But when you look at the everything else that's going around as well, the number of people that are involved in the violence, in the dangerous, and you know, you think in England they say dangerous use of flares is, you know, somebody lighting it and then chucking it by the side of the pitch. When you see what the video footage of what these Spartak Moscow fans have been doing, that's beyond the pale. You know, the Premier League would be Premier League officials would be absolutely bricking themselves if they saw anything like this taking place. It's like revolutionary violence, and it can't be brought into football grounds, and it shouldn't be this sort of violence, these sort of antics, this sort of brandishing of swastikas and stuff doesn't have a place in civilized society. Something has to be done, and done quickly. And this is a country that's going to be hosting the World Cup, for crying out loud, Raf. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hosting a World Cup with fans like that around.
I think somebody made. I think it was Tori who made the comment. You know, like just imagine what's going to be like when the World Cup goes there.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what we're going to do for next week.
Just apologize because I think I actually said on this show. You know, I kind of called out the referee for not, coming out and shutting down basically play for a moment. But
yeah.
Apparently, he actually did, and it was the UEFA, official who got that announcement and said, oh, no, I'm not going to stop the game because I don't see anything going on and we're not getting reports. He was actually relieved of his duties because he didn't follow the actual protocol and proceed with the warning that the referee had given him and shut down play for a moment and say over the tannoy, you need to stop or else, basically. So my apologies. I came out and kind of berated that referee, and I feel bad. He did his job, and I appreciate that. That's all.
Fair play, man. I'm glad that you are. No. And a nice touching statement to finish on. We'll try and get in contact with James Appel, who we spoke to a lot last year about Russian football, and of course in the build-up to Euro 2012. We'll try and get James Appel back on the show to talk to him about this and see what can be done, if anything can be done. Before we finish up the show, let's do the usual business and run through a little bit of IKTS very quickly indeed. Let's kick it off with the game that's kicking off early tomorrow, Newcastle against Chavsky, Chelsea, whatever you want to call them. Newcastle... plenty of pressure on Pardew. St James's Park, not only a tough place for Pardew to be right now, but it also could be the place where Celtic are playing their Champions League games while Celtic Park gets renovated next season. We'll keep you up to date with that. But Newcastle, Chelsea, Raf, what do you see? What do you see happening?
I see a 2-0 win. Very, very, very bland 2-0 win for Chelsea.
I see the unfortunate case. I'm saying this like I'm looking into a crystal ball. I see an unfortunate case for Newcastle of them taking the lead and then getting battered 3-1 by Chelsea. I don't think it's going to be too pretty for Newcastle this weekend.
More lineup changes you're expecting?
Pardon?
More lineup changes from Chelsea? Do you expect to see very many of the midweek replacements in the starting lineup this Saturday?
I don't expect to see too many, to be honest. I can't imagine Mattis being chucked straight back in. But it'd be nice to see, hopefully he will be. I have to say.
I don't know. See, I could see him being chucked in only because maybe Mourinho wants him to struggle a little bit. And it'd be I'm just saying.
Marino doing that, I'm going to shut people up by putting Wan-Mata in, and then when he struggles, and I can go, ha, I sawed you all wrong, just like he did with Casillas and co.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, you could see Mourinho doing that, actually. But no, I'm not sure. Maybe De Bruyne might get a chance. He keeps on talking about how he wants to play. Mate, you just joined the top. Anyway. Fulham against Manchester United, the first of 3 o'clock kickoffs. I'm going 2-0. David Moyes' men down at Craven Cottage. Fulham, you know, buoyed by that win against Crystal Palace last Monday, but it's not going to be the case. It's not going to be enough to get past Manchester United.
I see a 1-1 draw here, and I think that, yeah,
nasty.
I'm calling it. I'm calling it, man. Hey, Fulham have a history of beating United every now and then. I'm expecting a 1-1 draw.
A 1-1 draw. Fair enough. Moving into what might be...
Potentially putting on my safety on that one, by the way, though.
this could be a big tie in terms of the relegation race come the end of the season. Hull at home against Sunderland. Sunderland, of course, Gus Poyet with that magnificent win over Newcastle last Sunday. But can Sunderland on the road go to Hull and pick up a win? Hull have looked organised on the road as well. Steve Bruce will get a 1-0 victory for the Premier League new boys. Hull 1, Sunderland 0.
Yeah, that's exactly what I have. And this one's really tough for me to kind of, you know, call, because I would care less about watching these guys outside of any real game. So, I'm going 1-0 to Hull.
Manchester City, they need to start showing their Premier League title credentials. They take on Norwich. City winners in midweek in the Capital One Cup. Do you think Chris Hughton and the boys can stall City at the Etihad? I don't think so, man. 2-0 no. City.
Yeah, see, I'm going 3-1 City, only because, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, what a statement game from City. When actually, you should be saying, well, they shouldn't really be giving up that one goal from Norwich. But, 3-1 to City, and I'm going to go ahead and put my banker on that one.
Yeah, I think everybody's putting their banker on that one in IKTS this week. One that might be a little bit tougher to call, Stoke City. They've shown signs of greatness. They've also flattered to deceive at points. Do you think Southampton can go there and muscle their way past a still very physical Stoke side, or is Stoke at home still too tough a place to go to pick up 3 points?
I'm feeling like this has probably got a draw, even though I'm leaning a little bit towards Southampton getting all 3 points here on the road. It's tough to do that. So I'm going to say a 1-1 draw here.
1-1 draw, yeah. I've gone with 1-1 draw as well, actually, on this one. West Bromwich Albion take on Crystal Palace. Palace, without Ian Holloway, aren't in a rush, apparently, to sign a new manager. They might be, depending on how this weekend goes for them. It's Palace travelling to West Bromwich Albion. What have you got for this one, man?
I have West Brom coming away with a 1-0 victory here, actually.
West Brom with the 1-0. I'm going 2-1 West Brom. I was sceptical about them this season, but they've done all right. They've done enough to earn some love from me in IKTS. So yeah, I'm going to give them the 2-1 win. Both going for one goal wins for the Baggies this weekend. West Ham take on Aston Villa. Villa having to travel south to go and see Sam Allardyce's boys. What do you see for this one, mate?
You know, I've been expecting Villa to kind of come up and turn things around completely and really start, you know, shining. I'm hoping they come away with the 2-1 away victory from West Ham. Come on, West Ham.
Come on, West Ham. I'm going with a 2-1 victory for Villa on the road. I see Benteke back in form once again, tearing West Ham apart. And the 5:30 kickoff, the game that I think we all want to see. Unfortunately, I'm really quite frustrated that I'm covering the Panathinaikos Olympiakos game that kicks off at 5:30, because I really want to watch this. Arsenal against Liverpool at the Emirates. What's it going to be, big man?
I have this being a boring 1-0 victory to the Arsenal, primarily because they're at home, and primarily because they have a fairly rested squad coming from Tuesday.
Yeah, I've got 1-1. I don't think these two sides are going to be able to be separated. I think 1-1 will take place, and then people will start saying, "Well, are either these two sides so good they cancel each other out, or are they both sides that will struggle to fulfil the potential that they've shown at the beginning of the season. I think there will be some questions raised after this. It will be your people's choice whether it's good or bad. Everton take on Tottenham as well on Sunday. This is going to be goals, 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 my friend, although it probably won't be from Eric Lamella. Yeah, I do. I think Lukaku's going to be able to have his way with the Spurs defence that's been pretty rigid, and I think Tottenham will be forced to go and play against Everton up at Goodison Park. I don't see Everton sitting back against Spurs at home, so I see a 2-2 draw.
Sure. See, for some reason, I feel like Tottenham are kind of struggling to find goals, especially in regular time. So I was going to give it a 1-0 victory to Everton just because I think that Tottenham are going to stumble sometime soon. But instead, I'm going to go with a 2-1 victory away for Tottenham.
Fair play, giving AVB some more love, as the fans do as well down at White Hart Lane. And finally, this is a big derby. Have no doubt about this. It may not be the biggest sides, but seriously, this in terms of fan violence and whatnot, this could really kick off. Really kick off the South Wales derby of Cardiff against Swansea. There is fire in the air for this one. And please do not think that I'm being facetious and taking the mic here. This is truly a mammoth clash. The number of times these sides get to meet is minimal. And to do it in top flight action, both will be wanting to show that they are the kings of Wales right about now. Cardiff Swansea at Cardiff. What do you make of this one, Raf?
I have this a 2-1 Swansea away win, and I'm hoping that you know Cardiff actually score, because you know they have been struggling quite a bit. I know this is a little Welsh rivalry here.
It's difficult, I think, for you guys to get into it as much as maybe the folks in the UK are, but this is going to be a big game, and it is one that you should be watching. Other games coming up though around Europe tonight. We have PSG in action. They take on, if my computer will actually work, FC Lorient. There we go. PSG taking on Lorient. Tomorrow in France, Stade Rennais take on Olympique Marseille. Ajaccio take on Valenciennes. Evian take on Toulouse. Lyon take on Guingamp. Stade Rémy take on Bastia. Sochaux take on Saint-Étienne. And then on Sunday, Nice meet Bordeaux. Nantes meet Montpellier. And then it's the challenge of Lille to try and get past the mighty Monaco, who continue to plough on this season. In the Bundesliga tonight, Borussia Dortmund take on Stuttgart. By the way, Raf, I've just been invited to Stuttgart for a weekend. Very much looking forward to
it. Is this some boxing thing?
Yeah, covering some boxing. It's going to be very peculiar. But I get to get I'm starting to be flown out all over the world now, mate, with the commentary. Getting flown all the way to Stuttgart for boxing commentary. Should be fun. Anyway, Dortmund take on Stuttgart tonight in the Bundesliga. Then Nuremberg take on Freiburg. Hoffenheim take on Bayern Munich. Braunschweig take on Bayer Leverkusen. Hamburg take on Gladbach. Hertha Berlin take on Schalke. Frankfurt take on Wolfsburg in the evening game on Saturday. And then Augsburg against Mainz and Werder Bremen against Hanover are your games on the Sunday in Italy. The big question really is, can Roma continue their march of unbeaten form? But we have to wait and see. Before that, we've got Parma against Juventus, Milan, Fiorentina and Napoli, Catania on a big Saturday afternoon, an evening of football in Italy. And then Livorno take on Atalanta, Lazio, Genoa, Sampdoria, Sassuolo, Udinese against Inter, Verona against Cagliari, Torino against Roma, and then Bologna, which I think is kind of harsh, taking on Chievo. Do you think it's a little harsh that Chievo have been given the extra day as opposed to Roma, who have to play on the Sunday night? Considering they both played on the same night.
I mean, you would think that they would try to make that as fair as possible. But, I guess you can't have two teams or four teams playing on Monday?
Maybe not, maybe not. In Spain this weekend, it's the big Barcelona derby. Barca take on Espanyol. Can the local rivals get one over the Catalan giants? It's Real Sociedad taking on Osasuna on Saturday, as Almeria and Valladolid. I was slurring my words there. Rayo Vallecano take on Real Madrid, and Sevilla take on Celta Vigo. And Sunday sees Getafe against Valencia. Atletico Madrid take on Athletic Bilbao. Levante take on Granada. Malaga take on Real Betis. And Elche take on Villarreal. And of course, we have the MLS playoffs continuing this weekend. The Revolution take on SKC. And the Sounders take on the Timbers. And then we have, on Sunday, the Dynamo meet the Red Bulls. And the LA Galaxy take on RS NHL. Get your thoughts and predictions in for all the big games this weekend. There's plenty of them. There's plenty to not be missed. We're going to try and jam in as much of it as we can here on World Football Daily when we come back on Monday. But in the meantime, take care. Have a cracking weekend. And we will see you at the same time next week. Have a good one.